proceed, please, with case number one. Midway Airlines versus Monarch Air Service.
If it please the court, Arthur Jarris on behalf of the appellant, Monarch Air Service Incorporated. Good morning to the court. Monarch appeals from rulings of the bankruptcy court and the district court, which denied Monarch's assertion and claim of secured status for its allowed post-petition administrative expense claim. As the court will recall from the briefing, Monarch was a company based at Midway Airport engaged in operating jet aircraft fuel farm for Midway. Included in Monarch's work for Midway was exclusive control over Midway's fuel farm. And Monarch,
was your control exclusive? Midway had access to it, didn't they?
Only under limited circumstances granted by Monarch under the contract, Your Honor. And there was a 30-day provision for termination of Monarch's control provided for in the contract, which I believe was an exhibit to the adversary complaint. We were responsible unless we were removed on proper notice.
No, but they had access to it whenever they wanted to go in there, didn't they?
No, they didn't. We had locks on it, Your Honor, and in fact, when we were removed outside the contractual provision, Midway came in and changed the locks on us. So we had control. They were our locks, and we were responsible for safeguarding that fuel and for loading it onto our trucks and then fueling and defueling Midway's planes.
You're claiming a possessory lien here, I gather. Now, is there any notice to third parties that you're in possession of this fuel?
To third parties, yes. Yes, we were in physical possession on site.
Well, nobody could tell that from the outside, I wouldn't think.
Well, absolutely. We were there. Our personnel were there. Our trucks were there, Monarch trucks. And indeed, we were compelled by the order of the bankruptcy court to continue providing services to the debtor in possession just as we were providing them prior to the bankruptcy filing.
Let me take you a little bit afield. The fact that a footnote to the trustee's objection said that Monarch could expect to receive a percentage of the allowed amount, and that would seem to be a very strong hint that the trustee was not treating this as a secured claim, doesn't it?
To a layman receiving that objection form, it would not indicate anything in particular because there was no reference to secured status, Your Honor. As the court knows, under the bankruptcy code, a creditor asserting a secured claim does not necessarily receive 100% of his secured claim. If the value of the collateral is less than the claim, even though he's partially secured, he would not get 100%.
Yeah, but normally in this type of situation, wouldn't we expect a party represented by counsel to say, yes, we agree with the amount you propose, but by the way, remember, we have a lien and we intend to assert our security interest.
Well, this is a question. This is the fundamental question in the case, Your Honor. Section 502A of the code says that when a claim, proof of which is duly filed, is performed, then that claim is allowed unless objected to in writing under the rules. Mr. Lynch, the president of Monarch, receiving that form would see that the pre-petition amount was being objected to and that the post-petition amount was not being objected to. That's what the form indicates to Mr. Lynch as the president of the company, and he's the one that responded to this. There's no indication in the record that he received counsel on this at all. And when the bankruptcy court raised this on ruling day, that issue never having been raised in the adversary complaint, the issue of consent or waiver, never raised in their adversary complaint, never raised in their summary judgment briefing, and we come to ruling day, and the bankruptcy judge raises this for the first time. And we said, at a minimum, we want an evidentiary hearing as to what Mr. Lynch knew at the time he signed that consent, what his understanding was. Because it doesn't say they're objecting to the secured status.
Well, I agree with you that the trustee didn't say anything explicit about whether the allowed amount was secured or not, but wasn't the gist of what the trustee was saying in the objection sheet, here is all you are going to get. And wasn't it quite implicit that the trustee was not treating this as a secured claim?
No, because the segregated fund, remember back at the start of the case, there was an agreement that these funds would be held in a segregated account. They're still being held in a segregated account. So there was no mention in the trustee's objection to the pre-petition claim of the segregated fund or what would happen to it. This was, in fact, the use of a standard form objection that the court had prescribed to deal with creditors' claims and objections generally. So when there's a footnote to the consented to portion, even the consented to portion, Your Honor, was strange because it says, we propose to allow this amount. But the bankruptcy court had already entered an order allowing it. So this form wasn't even accurate in terms of how the trustee completed it. Because the objection form says we propose to allow the post-petition amount. It had already been allowed 8 or 9 months earlier by court order. So how could the trustee merely be proposing to allow it? This is a question of where the burden is. And the statute says that if a proof of claim is properly and timely filed, which is uncontested, it's allowed unless objected to. There were no words objection to the lien status, to the secured status.
They're claiming a secured administrative claim. That's a very unusual animal, isn't it?
It is not common, but we've pointed to case law and we've done the analysis of the statute that shows, for instance, where real estate taxes.
That's the only exception that I know of is real estate taxes.
This is also an exception. The bankruptcy court...
Is there a fuel exception beyond the real estate exception?
For a possessory lien, Your Honor, that arises by operation of law, I believe the bankruptcy court correctly found that the only basis for objecting to it, Section 362 automatic stay that was raised by the trustee, is not applicable. Number one, Monarch was compelled virtually at day one of Midway's case to continue to perform the services. That in itself,
I understand that. That's why you get a priority for your debt, but I don't think you get a secured position on account of that.
Local law continues to apply the same as before unless the stay bars its operation. And the bankruptcy court agreed with us and cited additional authority in addition to our analysis, that the stay has no application to this situation where the debtor did not take any unilateral action to create the lien. What we did is we observed and abided by the injunctive order requiring us to maintain the pre-petition possession. We performed our services, and the law says that we have a possessory lien. So we think that part of the bankruptcy court ruling should be affirmed. And that was the only basis on which objection was made to secured status for our post-petition claim in the adversary complaint and in the summary judgment submissions.
You'd better proceed with your argument if you have one.
Your Honor, basically...
You're into your rebuttal time right now.
All right, thank you, Judge. I'll be finished in just a moment. So, the district court wrote that the burden is on the claimant to press his proof of secured claim. There was no authority cited for that proposition. Section 502A says it's just the opposite. Once the duly filed proof of claim is filed, it's on the burden of the debtor or the trustee to object. There was no plain language of objection. the footnote merely indicates that the payout will be some percentage. The debtor, Mr. Lynch, the president of Monarch, was not told how that percentage would be calculated, whether that percentage would be even more or less than 100%, because under the code, interest can be added to a secured claim if there's adequate collateral. So that didn't tell him at all anything about whether he would get that segregated account or not. We've been denied an evidentiary hearing as to what was communicated, in fact, to Mr. Lynch, whether he had received advice of counsel or not. The district court assumed he'd received advice of counsel on this. There's nothing in the record that shows that. We asked for an evidentiary hearing. We were denied that. All this came up sua sponte with no opportunity even to brief it. It wasn't raised in the adversary complaint.
You told us that.
Thank you. The substantive issue which the court raised is whether or not we in fact have a possessory Bailey's lien. And there we cited to ILP Bailman, Section 20. We cited the Hanschett decision of the Illinois Supreme Court. And we cited to this own court's ruling in the Coverundum case that the storage is a service to, which is included within the scope of a Bailey's lien. So we believe we do have a Bailey's lien under substantive law, and we do not believe we waived our rights in any way. We think that our proof of claim should have been respected. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Richard Smollett. I represent Sheldon Solo, the trustee of Midway Airlines. As is evident from the pleadings and from the Court's questions, the two issues of the fairness of the notice and the existence of the lien have melded in this one instance. We think that while we did not raise the fairness question, the propriety of the notice below, because we thought the lien issues were fairly straightforward, the bankruptcy judge properly put them into play. We think Judge Nordberg pretty well captured the essence of the fairness question when he said the fact that Monarch is even complaining that a bankruptcy practitioner would have noticed what Mr. Lynch apparently didn't notice is an admission on Monarch's part that the notice did serve the purpose of putting them on some sort of inquiry notice of what was going to be done with respect to the cash that was sitting in the escrow.
Well, but at the time of the 1992 sale of the jet fuel, the bankruptcy court had entered an order providing that liens would attach to the proceeds of the sale. Okay. And the proceeds of that sale had been placed in escrow pending, you know, the determination as to the validity of Monarch's asserted lien where they still sit.
That's correct.
So everyone has been on notice since 1992 that Monarch was asserting a lien. Why then was the trustee not obliged to specifically object to the validity of the lien if that is what his intent was? In other words, why are you arguing that the burden was on Monarch to reassert that lien when it signed the consent?
The bankruptcy code itself, that's how the bankruptcy code itself allocates burdens. The rules are that once a claim is filed, it is prima facie deemed allowed until there is an objection by a party in interest, including a trustee. Upon the objection, the burden then shifts to the claimant to prove all of the elements of the claim.
But waiver, you know, waiver is the intentional relinquishment of a known right. And what I'm trying to figure out here is, what is there in the trustee's objection sheet and Monarch's consent that makes it clear that Monarch was deliberately relinquishing its lien?
The only reference is the reference to the fact that less than the full amount of the claim would be paid. But I think you have to answer that question, Your Honor, by looking at this from Mr. Lynch's perspective or the perspective of his general counsel when the two of them looked at the claim objection form. They believed, they knew that $36,000 was sitting in escrow. They believed themselves to have full access to that escrow. Why then would they sign a consent form which contained a note that they would be receiving less than the form? We submit, Your Honor, that this is where the two issues come together. We submit that because of the nature of the services that they were performing, they could not, as a matter of law, assert a secured claim. And perhaps it was in recognition of that. I cannot read the mind, but I think at some point that question has to give way to the question of just do they have a lien in the first place?
But
and that takes us back to the governing document.
But the reason you can't read the mind, it seems to me, is because neither the trustee nor Monarch said anything about the lien at all in either the objection or the consent.
You're correct. We did not. We made the decision when we filed our objection, not the claim form itself, but the objection itself, to attack the substantive issues. It was the bankruptcy judge that raised the waiver and the consent form, and you're correct, and the district court affirmed solely on the basis of waiver. We were looking at it always from the substantive question of let's go back to the governing document, determine what services Monarch performed, and determine if those services could give rise to a state court lien, and they did not.
But Monarch have exclusive possession of fuel at any point?
No, that's really the point. And Monarch, the way that Monarch has worked itself toward a warehouseman's like lien claim, which is what they're now arguing, is quite interesting. They argued in the beginning that they had a Bailey's lien, and when the bankruptcy court said, well, you don't really have an artisan's lien because you didn't enhance the value of the fuel, what has now happened is they have subtly changed their position in front of this court and said they are like a warehouseman. And, of course, they cite carborundum. The first step, then, is they cite the state court cases that say you can have non-consensual liens, as in real estate taxes, for example. They then cite carborundum for the fact that storage can give rise to a warehouse lien. The only problem is when you go back to the governing document, Your Honor, they were not hired to perform storage. They were hired to, and it's clear that the governing document provides that the tanks belong to the city of Chicago. They're leased to Midway. Fuel was brought in from the outside. Monarch's job was to take fuel from the tank, drive it over to a plane, fill the plane, to empty the planes when necessary, put the fuel back, to maintain it and to maintain records.
Could they deny access to Midway to the fuel?
I don't think they could.
Midway wanted to look at the fuel.
The best I can do is answer that question in the hypothetical, Your Honor, because it never came up. I don't think, though, that under the documents, because there is an acknowledgement in the documents of the Midway's ownership of the facility and particularly the tanks and the fuel, I don't believe they could. But I can't tell you right now that whether that confrontation ever
arose. Maybe they have a carrier's lien. They had to move the fuel from one place to another.
They might have had a carrier's lien, which is the one sort of lien they really haven't asserted, although they've come close. But if they had a carrier's lien, it would only be for the moment in time when they drew fuel from the tank, drove it over to the plane. And that's not what we're talking about.
The fuel in the tank, in the truck, I assume.
Well, for the amount of fuel in a truck at any discrete period of time when that act is going on.
Did they keep it locked with their own locks?
I don't think there's anything particular in the record to that, but I believe that to have been the case.
You believe what?
That there were Monarch locks as opposed to Midway locks.
Did you have access to entry into the tanks or extra keys to the locks? Or
I don't know the answer to that question, Your Honor. But again, it is our position that while the bankruptcy court and the district court did raise issues of waiver, that we did not. We feel the answer ultimately, and the reason that the lower court must be affirmed on this, comes back to the governing documents. If you look at the agreement that governed the relationship between the parties, Monarch simply did not perform the services that would give rise to a lien. I've been trying to think of an appropriate
language.
I'm sorry?
What language specifically are you referring to?
I'm referring, Your Honor, to the scope of services in the airport fueling services agreement.
What phrase or what language, what sentence or sentences? Or is
there's
it
nothing
the whole
that,
agreement?
There's nothing that contains the negative, Your Honor. What that statement is supported by the fact that when you look at the description of services, which is on Exhibit A, they talk about into plane fueling, and then they describe the task, quality control, which simply sets the standard, related management reports, aircraft defueling, which is taking it out, and fuel storage facility maintenance operation. That's the scope of their services. They're not hired to for storage. In fact, the document itself provides on page 2 of the document, and I'm quoting, "The parties further understand and acknowledge that the fuel farm storage facilities and related equipment to be utilized by vendor, Monarch, in the performance of the services, which I just described, as herein provided, are owned by the City of Chicago and leased by the City to Midway, under and pursuant to which lease Midway controls such fuel farm storage facilities." So while you've asked me questions about the immediate question of access, as a matter of law and as a matter of the relationship between the parties, they already allocated that question. This would be different if we had hired Monarch for the purpose of storing our fuel. But Monarch, in many ways, it's trying to fit itself into the model of a warehouseman. What it really is, it's a little bit like the fellow in the warehouse who drives the forklift truck to move goods from one place to another within the warehouse. That's the provision of a service. That does not give rise to the possessory lien, which is why we advance the lack of lien argument as opposed to the waiver argument.
You're not arguing that there isn't such a thing as a Bailey's lien for the storage of goods, are you?
Oh, no, of course not.
Okay.
I'm arguing that they don't meet the test.
Are you also relying on the automatic stay?
We relied on the automatic stay. That was the argument that we advanced in the bankruptcy court. There is law for the proposition that a non-consensual lien can obtain for things like real estate taxes, but they have to come from a statutory basis. The problem here, again, is if you go back to the governing document and then mesh that up against the law, which is required in the state to establish a warehouseman's lien, they don't have the facts because they didn't provide the service. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, counsel.
Counsel for the trustee has accused Monarch of a subtle change of position as to the substantive basis of the lien. This is absolutely incorrect. From day one in our proof of claim, we have always asserted a Bailey's lien. The bankruptcy court judge attributed to us or described our basis as artisan's lien. We have never taken the position that this was an artisan's lien. Always a Bailey's lien. We have been consistent throughout. In terms of the contract interpretation, which has never been discussed, I believe, in any of the briefs, I'm happy to discuss it. Exhibit A to the contract provides as follows on page A1. Monarch is to provide into-plane fueling. It is to provide aircraft defueling. And with respect to the fuel storage facility, it says vendor, which is Monarch, shall provide manpower to monitor fuel deliveries into and withdrawals out of Midway Fuel Farm storage facility at all pertinent times. On page A2, it goes on to say, vendor shall routinely maintain and operate the fuel farm storage facility as directed in the Midway Fuel Manual or as otherwise reasonably directed by Midway and accepted by vendor. Midway could give directions, but they had to be accepted.
You didn't own the tanks, though, and you didn't lease the tanks. So
that's the essence of a bailment. Hmm? Is that, Your Honor, not the essence of a bailment? The person in possession doesn't have title.
You can fix up the tanks. Doesn't make you a bailee, as far as I'm concerned.
The essence of bailment, I believe, is the possessory right. Do you have possession of something that belongs to another under an agreement? What we are saying...
For what purpose, though? That's the point.
A bailment can arise for any purpose. If we have possession under a contract of somebody else's property, that makes us the bailee. And indeed, we're not claiming to have owned the fuel farm.
How did you have possession? Wasn't your position just to pick it up out of the tank and deliver it to the airplane or take it from the airplane if they wanted to return it to the tank?
It was more than that, Your Honor.
Isn't that what is specified in the contract?
No, it says that, but it also says this. It says, vendor shall routinely maintain and operate the fuel farm storage facility, which meant securing it with our own locks, as counsel has acknowledged. We were in exclusive control. We alleged in the pleadings below that our locks were forcibly removed. We were thrown out. without Midway following the contractual procedure on page A2 of the contract that gave them an option to manage the fuel facility themselves. It says on 30 days notice to vendor, that is Monarch, Midway may assume the maintenance and operation functions. They didn't go through that procedure. That would have given us time to come in and assert our lien rights. They came in and threw us out, tore our locks off, replaced them. And
you told us that before twice.
All right. Well, it's important because a possessory lien cannot be lost when your possession is lost involuntarily, which is important to our case. As already noted, the bankruptcy court order authorizing the sale of the fuel did say that possessory liens would attach. So what possessory liens would there be? They would be ours as the caretaker of the fuel while it was in the fuel farm and while it was in our trucks. The adversary complaint shows that they knew how to make an objection to secured status. They said, we object to secure that. That's not what they did in the pre-adversary objection, the administrative proceeding. They never used that language. They knew how to use it, but they chose not to. Two other points, and then I'll be finished. Counsel has repeatedly characterized that footnote as saying we were told we would be paid less than the full amount. May I have 30 seconds additional, please?
Yes, 30 seconds.
Thank you very much. The footnote does not say less than the full amount. It says a percentage. That percentage could have been more than 100% or less than 100%. Even if less than 100%, that could be because the value of the collateral, the segregated proceeds, was less than the dollar amount of the claim. So that doesn't tell Mr. Lynch that he's not going to get any of the segregated account at all. It does not say that. Finally, the bankruptcy court compelled Monarch to perform these services.
Your time is up, sir.
Thank you. Out of fairness to Monarch, we ask that we be paid.
Thank you kindly. Thank you both. May we proceed to case number 2, please. Frank Brothers versus the Wisconsin Department of Transportation.